Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello everybody and welcome to this midweek edition of La Liga Lowdown as we recap the midweek action we just had in match day 4 of the new La Liga season. As always, I'm your host Jim McTeer and as always, we're rebroadcast on Sirius XMFC 157. We've got some really great interviews coming up with fans and journalists of clubs from around La Liga, but this episode we're going to start by discussing Eibar versus Elche. It may not be the most glamorous fixture of this round, but on La Liga Lowdown, we're all about the smaller clubs as much as we're about Real Madrid and Barcelona. And don't worry, we'll still discuss the two giants in part two. But I want to start by discussing Eibar versus Elche because this is a really interesting fixture. It's one with a lot of history.
Hola Silvia, ¿qué tal? Buena nit. Comencem amb una notícia preocupant que sense cap dubte avui ha conmocionat a tot el futbol espanyol i és la decisió del jutge únic que ha decidit el descens administratiu de l'Elx.
That was a clip from the local Valencian news from June 5th, 2015, which was 12 days after the end of the 2014-15 season. As the news anchor explained there, Elche were administratively relegated by a judge. They didn't finish in the relegation zone that season, they finished 13th, but they were administratively demoted due to unpaid debts, and Eibar, who occupied that last relegation place in 18th, were given a stay of execution. They were able to stay up in the top division at Elche's expense, and not everyone around Elche were best pleased with Eibar's joy at that decision. Eibar, on the other hand, argued that Elche only finished as high as they did because they signed players they couldn't afford. Anyway, since then, Eibar have never been relegated and Elche hadn't returned to the top division until this summer. Now they are returning and, adding an extra layer of intrigue to the story, current Elche CEO Patricia Rodriguez was Eibar's financial director back in 2015 at the time of all the drama between the two clubs. She even took part in a press conference where Eibar outlined why they thought Elche should be demoted. For the Elche fans, Wednesday's match away at Eibar was a chance for revenge, and they took it. 1-0 it was, a goal from new signing Lucas Boye that did it. Well, that and a sky penalty from Eibar's Edu Exposito. So congratulations to Elche who win their first La Liga match since their promotion. It's one win and one defeat for them. For Eibar though, it's a situation that's a lot more concerning. One draw against Celta Vigo and then defeats to Villarreal, Athletic Club, and Elche. Let's bring in Basque journalist Beñat Gutierrez now to discuss Eibar's situation. Beñat, it's 4 matches for Eibar, no wins. And that last match was a home defeat to an Elche side that many believe to be the worst in the division. Could this start to the season have been much worse for Eibar?
It could have been, yeah. At least they were able to keep the games tight. And even with all the problems they are having on the start of the season, you can still see Mendilibar's blueprint on Eibar. They are tough, they are difficult to beat, and even when they are losing, they keep the score close. So Obviously, four games in a row without achieving a victory is something to be worried about, but there are other things that go beyond the results that should concern Eibar supporters. They have problems on the midfield. I think they lack of creative players. They are also struggling a lot to figure out who can replace the injured Kote on the left back.
Even if they've only lost some of the games by the odd goal like you mentioned, I know that many Eibar fans aren't happy with the attitude of the players. Is that criticism justified?
It's always difficult to evaluate players' attitude. Usually that's one of the things that makes them very upset when their attitudes are questioned. That said, I feel, and I know this is pretty obvious, this may sound like something stupid to point out, players may be missing the supporters. What I mean is that Ipurua is quite a special stadium, and its atmosphere has been a key player on Eibar's success in the past seasons. On an empty stadium, it's easier to let yourself go when things are not going well, and I don't think that equals a lack of attitude on the field. We're seeing some results, we're seeing some moments where it seems that players are lacking of the intensity we think they should have, but that's usually explained by the poor atmosphere they are surrounded by on an empty stadium.
No, I don't think that's a stupid point to make at all. It's something that we're sometimes forgetting, the fact that these games are behind closed doors. It's weird how we've sort of gotten used to this so quickly, but even if the fans aren't there to chant and back the team, Mendili Bar is right there to shout at them. He can probably shout even louder and more clear than usual. He really is one of the best coaches in the division though, and I feel a little bit sorry for him because I think Eibar's problem right now is that they just don't have enough quality in this year's squad. Do you agree with that?
I need to confess that I was surprised when Mendili Bar extended his contract with Eibar. It felt like the perfect time to part ways and to end an era that has been very successful for both sides. He's been there for 6 seasons, and that's a lot of time. He had to come up with something new every year, reinvent the team with new players, and that's a very demanding task. That's one issue. The other is the quality of the squad, obviously. They lost important players like Escalante, Orellana, or Cristoforo, and so far the new additions are not working as expected. And I say so far because we're still on an early age of the season, and things can change and they can turn into valuable players for Mendili Bar, but feels like they need 2-3 signings to improve the quality of their roster. It's not clear, though, that they will have the money for, considering that they spend money on the renovation of Ipurua and on the building of a new training center that is very important for the club's future.
One of the rumours I've heard is that Fernando Llorente, who is Basque, of course, could come into Eibar this transfer window. Do you see that as realistic?
It would be quite surprising to see Fernando Llorente in Eibar. He left Athletic to win trophies. He did, but probably he didn't have as much success as he wanted to. So could we kind of thought to see him back in the Basque Country playing for a team whose goal is to avoid relegation and where the pressure to score would be huge on him? Also, from the Eibar point of view, and considering they have limited resources to go to the market, probably they need other things rather than a striker. Quique García is not as good as Llorente, but he is a working-class striker who fits really well on the team.
So finally, Benya, can you tell us just what the general mood in the Basque Country is right now regarding Eibar? Do people sense that 2020-2021 might be the season when they finally get relegated?
Yeah, people is concerned. Eibar is a team a lot of people have a sympathy for, even between the supporters of other Basque teams. Eibar's performance so far hasn't been good, actually it was pretty poor. And now everything is about finding 3 teams that are worse than them to avoid relegation. It is true that it's not their first rodeo, and that with Mendy the team tends to improve as games go by, but it seems that if it's not the year they get relegated, they're gonna have to fight a lot to avoid it. They have problems, they had them last year, they were able to compete well on the last stage of the season, but let's see what happened this year because they are lacking a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they certainly are. It hasn't been a good start at all for Eibar. On the other hand, a much better start for Elche than most of that club's fans possibly hoped for. Well, thank you, Benya, for providing the lowdown there. Now, it's the time in the podcast where we bring you some of the best commentary from the world of La Liga. For this midweek round, what we call our sore throat game of the week is Villarreal versus Alaves, because there were many goals and lots of drama for the commentators to work through. It was a fun game, and here's Matt Clark to talk us through it.
Villarreal got over their defeat at the weekend by beating Alaves 3-1 at Estadio de la Ceramica. But there was plenty of drama in this game. Before, there was some pressure on Unai Emery after the manner of their first half performance at Camp Nou. And more eyebrows were raised when Take Kubo was once again left on the bench, especially as Samu Chukwueze was also left out. Many Villarreal fans are clamouring for him to get a run of games. Into this game then, and Villarreal showed no signs of a hangover. Paco Alcácer showed what a clinical finisher he is with the opening goal after just 13 minutes. Mario Gaspar crossed to the near post where Alcácer showed tremendous skill and finesse to open his foot and guide the ball to the back post from an acute angle. Toca Tito, in the words of the Cope commentator.
Así llega el depredador del área. Balón de Mario Gaspar desde la línea de fondo y al primer palo. Como más le gusta, con la caña preparada. ¡Pap! Toquecito al palo largo, dar el poste y para adentro. Marca Alcácer.
But Alaves found themselves level in quite bizarre circumstances. A long and rather hopeful ball forward seemed to bamboozle Sergio Asenjo as he came out to collect, but completely misjudged the trajectory of the ball and was well outside of his area. So he realised he couldn't touch it or he'd be sent off. As the ball bounced right over his head, Edgar Méndez was only too happy to tap it into an unguarded net.
Error de Asenjo y el tanto de Edgar Méndez, el tanto del empate minuto 36 de una forma sorprendente. Llega el gol, se lo acaba de encontrar el Deportivo Alavés, pero había que estar ahí para desde luego aprovechar esa enorme oportunidad.
Error de Asenjo, en una forma sorprendente. Undoubtedly a surprising error in its rarity, and Alavés took full advantage of that enormous opportunity. Alaves repaid them before the break though, giving away a penalty, which Gerard Moreno calmly converted. This goal meant that Moreno has now scored in all three of Villarreal's home games this season. And if you go back to the end of last season, he has now scored in his last six matches at La Ceramica. Moreno was determined to finish the match in the second half, and he nearly did, but his shot struck the post. Luckily for Villarreal, his partner in crime, Alcácer, was on hand to control it, dink it beyond Fernando Pacheco, and finish the chance and the game. This is how it sounded on Cope.
Gol en Villarreal. Rafa.
Gol de Paco Alcácer. Otro balón a la espalda. Deja sola Gerard Moreno. Tira la vaselina. Da en el poste. Y el rechace le cae a Alcácer. Sortea Pacheco. Y empuja para adentro.
It was double trouble at the top end of the pitch. Alcácer and Moreno are a formidable pair and sit together at the top of the Pichichi standings after their evening's work. As for Alaves, the pressure is starting to grow on coach Pablo Machin. They have just 1 point on the board from their first four games, and the coach has already deviated away from his preferred 3-5-2 system to a more Alaves-style 4-4-2. As a coach, Machin is now winless in 12 La Liga matches dating back to last October. With two home games against Athletic Club and Elche coming up next, they need to get a win pretty soon.
Thanks for that, Matt. Alaves really do need to get some points on the board soon, or it'll be trouble for Machin. A good guy, a friend of La Liga Lowdown 2, as we've had him on before. His methods just need time in certain clubs, and hopefully he gets it. But keep in mind that Alaves owner Jose Antonio Querejeta is pretty ruthless when it comes to underperforming coaches. Remember, they even let Jose Bordalas go after he won them promotion in 2016. He literally won the Spanish second division and was sacked for it. But he's done all right for himself since then, and he currently sits at the summit of La Liga Santander with Getafe. Yes, that's right. Getafe are top of the table at the end of this match day four, and we're going to discuss them next. That's coming up after this short break.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello everyone and welcome back to part 2 of our Matchday 4 recap. We're going to start this section with the league leaders, that's Getafe. They've only played 3 fixtures, one fewer than most teams, but they've got 7 points and are top on goal difference after a huge 3-0 win over Betis, one achieved without needing much possession at all. I feel like we've seen this movie before. So let's get into it, let's start praising this amazing Getafe side, and let's do so with Getafe supporter Dom Tancock. 7 points, 3 clean sheets. This Getafe are much improved compared to the post-lockdown Getafe that finished last season. What's changed, Dom?
What a fantastic start it's been. The squad seems fresher. The squad seems happier with its surroundings. More acclimatised to not having supporters in the stadium. And some new faces, which of course helps any squad and just brightens up the place. I also think having no European football is a big factor in the start. The start of the Europa League campaign particularly is always very hectic, and possibly, you know, which seems mad to say, it will do Getafe a favour. You know, I know we craved it so much at the end of last season and fought hard to the last day, but perhaps this season it might do us a favour.
Some, I think, thought the Bordalas methods might grow stale this season, but surely having him for another season can only be a good thing.
In the six, seven weeks of the end of last season, the team played with a huge cloud over them, and that was Bordalas going, because I think everyone was convinced he was, whether that was to Valencia or I think he was linked with Roma. Almost certainly, I think most pundits and most Getafe fans feared that he would be leaving. But he is the perfect fit. He is absolutely the perfect fit for Getafe, and he's rejuvenated the club and has worked wonders in the last 4 seasons. And we go into the 5th with him as the manager. And he admitted himself in the summer, you know, maybe it was his time to leave, but he hasn't. He's still here and he's happy. And I, for one, are delighted. And I think you can see the players are delighted. And it's possibly, you know, freshened up the whole look. So, yeah, it's a fantastic achievement that Bordalas has committed to the club.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Keeping Bordalas is such a boost. And what about keeping Marc Cucurella, who signed on a permanent transfer and who scored a brilliant long-range goal in the win over Betis?
He was by far and away the best player during the lockdown end to last season, and he started this season fantastically well. I know Bordalas has said that he needs to score more goals, and I think he's already equaled his tally with the goal this season. So it's a massive positive, and he seems happy. You know, his post-game comments was all about him being happy and him wanting to drive the team forward and build on his career as well. So you know, if he keeps scoring goals like that, then Cucurella will be a fantastic permanent addition to the Getafe squad.
And what about Cucho? What does he bring to the team? Can you describe what he brings to the team's attack?
Very versatile, very quick, and already come up with two assists this season already. So he's done more in these three games than Deiveson did for us at the end of last season. And he just looks a younger, fresher, better version of Deiveson, really. And I think he'll do fantastically well for us. Under the guidance of Bordalas, who has a knack of turning these types of players into better quality players. And I'm sure that will be the same with Cucho. And I'm sure he seems committed to the club.
Getafe have flirted with Champions League the past few seasons. They've got into the Europa League as well, of course. What would you say is the objective for this season? What do you want from 2020-2021?
I'd love to see us compete for the Copa del Rey. I think if we could go on a good cup run, it would be a brilliant achievement. And it's possible without the distraction again of the Europa League football campaign. You know, let's give winning a cup a real good shot. But yeah, Bordalas is the key to everything, and I'm delighted he's staying. And hopefully the start of the season will continue in the way it started. Yeah, vamos Geta.
So thanks for that, Dom. You can just tell how excited Dom is that Bordalas is staying, and you can't blame him. A truly excellent coach, and if you're interested in finding out more about the Jose Bordalas story so far and what might lie in store in the future, check out a piece by Ruri Barlow on LaLigaLowdown.com titled Jose Bordalas, the Roman Ready to Conquer. Now, Dom mentioned there that Bordalas was linked with Valencia at one point, but in the end it was Javi Gracia who ultimately got that job, and he just oversaw something of a shock win as his side won 1-0 away at Real Sociedad with a Maxi Gomez goal. We heard Valencia fan and journalist Paco Pollitt's frustrations about Valencia at the weekend after their draw with Huesca. Let's hear what he has to say now after that victory. Paco, this was a rare thing for Valencia. This was an away win. It's been a while since you could say that, hasn't it?
Yep, almost 10 months since December 2019 when they beat Levante at Estadio Ciudad de Valencia. All in all, it was an awful stat, especially for a team which is expected to fight for important goals at the end of the season. 2020 hasn't been kind for the team when going on the road, but they were finally able to turn things around after two consecutive awful displays when playing against Celta away and Huesca home. The final minutes were pure agony, but those 3 points were absolutely huge for Valencia.
Mm-hmm. In this one, they were dominated in terms of possession by Real Sociedad, but the counter-attack in football worked. How much praise does Javi Gracia deserve for this?
I think praise for Javi Gracia should be focused on two main moves: making the whole team to work hard when defending, and obviously being able to cancel Real Sociedad's strong points while remaining competitive. The whole squad ran quite a lot during the game, and in fact I believe leaving Gonzalo Guedes on the bench and without playing minutes was a strong statement coming from the coach. He wants players to be committed, and it didn't seem commitment was Guedes' main worry in the first couple of games. There were a few nifty tricks here and there which Javi Gracia used in the game in Anoeta, and the most visible one was starting youngster Portuguese Thierry Correa on the right back. He possibly, by the way, had his best game with Valencia shirt to date. And also the other big change was placing Daniel Vaz as some sort of all-around playmaker in the midfield. The Danish player was, in my view, one of the big highlights for his team by setting up the play which ended in Maxi's goal, and also overall being all around the pitch, running up and down, passing the ball around, recovering it, and being one of the leaders of the team. Valencia will be unable to play in the same way they used to do in the last 5 or 6 seasons, because obviously Parejo is no longer there, but it surely seems Javi Gracia trusts quite a lot Daniel Vaz, and he might choose him to be the one in charge of carrying that mantle.
Valencia went up against one of their former players, David Silva, in this match. What have you thought about his performances so far this season as he tries to replace Odegaard at La Real?
First of all, I don't really think David Silva's job is to replace Odegaard. I think he actually improves Odegaard in quite a few areas. Yeah, well, Silva's 34 and his pacing is not the same as a 21-year-old kid, but the way he bossed the game in the first half surely resembled some of his best days back in Valencia and also back in Manchester City. I can see he's still picking up his true form and slowly getting in shape, but Real Sociedad have made a monster signing with him and I expect greatness from the midfielder this season, regardless of the fact that Real Sociedad lost to his former side.
Okay, thank you Paco. Let's now move on to Real Madrid and to Barcelona, the two most likely title challengers, even if, and I'll say it again, Getafe are top as we speak. Real Madrid played Real Valladolid on Wednesday night, just a few hours after it was confirmed that Eden Hazard has suffered a new injury. He'll be out for around a month. Zidane started Benzema and Jovic together again in this game, the first time ever he's played them from the start two games in a row. And it worked. Jovic was really good, and I thought he was unlucky not to score. Then Zidane changed things up midway through the second half by bringing on wingers Asensio and Vinicius, and Vinicius almost immediately scored when a ball rolled right to him in front of the goalkeeper. It was a good finish, but it meant that the narrative to come out of this game was that Vinicius equals good and Jovic equals bad. But I wouldn't put it as simplistic as that at all. Jovic showed real signs of life and Real Madrid now have 7 points. Just one behind them are Barcelona, who have played a game less, remember. They got a win this match day too, and it was a really impressive performance as they went away to Celta Vigo in very wet and windy conditions, winning 3-0 despite going down to 10 men in the first half when Clement Longley got two yellows. We often hear people say that Messi couldn't do it on a wet and windy night in Stoke, but is a wet and windy night in Vigo maybe even more difficult? Let's ask Roman de Arquer, our man in Barcelona. What do you think, Roman? Is this one of the toughest places to go and get a win?
It is. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Let's not forget that Barcelona hadn't won at Balaidos since 2015. Since then, they've played 6 games there, and it was 3 draws and 3 defeats for Barcelona. So that's a very, very tough stadium for Los Culés. And just imagine, in those conditions, you could see the corner flag. It was just almost flying off because of the harsh wind there was and the rain. So, I mean, Barcelona had a really tough game, and I have to say, chapeau. I mean, that performance was extremely impressive. I mean, I was very impressed already with the game against Villarreal, but this game was just, you know, a real test to see if Barca were at the level required, because, as I said before, Celta is an extremely tough team for Barcelona. It's one of those sides that always put us in problems, and somehow this team performed so well, and it's the same guys almost that we saw in that game against Bayern Munich in that 8-2 defeat. So really impressive, the change in attitude and how things seem to be working with Koeman at the moment. Really good job.
And it was another great start to the match for Barcelona, just like against Villarreal. This early directness is something we didn't see often under Setien, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something we haven't seen in a very long time in Barcelona, not just with Setien, I'd say with other managers too. And I'm really impressed how Koeman is capable of changing the team so quickly in such a short period of time, because let's not forget their preseason has been very, very short, like most teams. And it's not just the fact that they're very dynamic and vertical and there's a lot of directness, but they're also very creative. They're linking up really well, the players, and they're combining extremely well. It's not just slow passes, you know, and taking their time and losing momentum. They're making really quick one-touch passes, and they're moving out and occupying the spaces to receive again. And this is really causing a lot of trouble to the defenses, as we saw against Villarreal and Celta, where they don't really know where to go, how to mark the players. And it's generating a lot in attack for Barcelona. So very impressive work from Koeman in this short period of time.
What were your thoughts on the red card for Longley? Correct decision?
Absolutely not. I mean, I have to disagree with the referee, and I have no problem in admitting when there's a red card or a foul that deserves a sending off. But in this case, I think it was such a harsh decision. I mean, first of all, the ball was going towards the sideline. So even if Lenglet doesn't touch Denis Suarez, Lenglet is going to quickly be able to close him down, because he barely had any space, any real danger, because he was going away from the box and not into it. And furthermore, Lenglet's arm and hand doesn't hit him in the face, it goes straight to the shoulder. So I think it was just a simple foul and there was no more to it. I think that was a really harsh decision from the referee, and I have to disagree with it.
You're right, you do accept right here on this podcast the correct decisions that do go against Barcelona, so it does seem a harsh one. And what were you thinking at that moment? How concerned were you to have Barcelona playing with 10 men in Vigo with just a one goal lead at that time?
Well, my thought at that moment was, here we go again, you know, imagining previous results at Balaidos. Also, Sergio Roberto had been sent up a couple of years ago there. And of course, things went badly for Barcelona in the end. And I expected more of the same, so I was extremely concerned. But then, I mean, the reaction from the team with one man down was very, very impressive. I think nobody expected that from Barcelona. I think most of us were like, okay, Celta are just going to push and get the goals. But Barca were so disciplined in attack. First of all, they came out in the second half extremely strong, combining like in the first and looking for that other goal, and they finally found it. But also in defense, they were extremely well positioned, very tight lines of four at the back, avoiding Celta's from generating important chances. And I mean, the intensity was incredible from the team. And I'm really surprised how they achieved this result, because they really deserved it with the hard work they put on the field.
Okay, thank you, Roman. Now, Barcelona weren't the only team to go away from home and win with 10 men this week. Or, well, they sort of were, actually, because I'm referring to Cadiz, who went away and won in Bilbao against Athletic with 9 men. And it wasn't just a couple of late reds. Carlos Acapulco got sent off in minute 48, and Alvaro Negredo in minute 70 for 2 bookings just 9 minutes after he came on. That's almost impressive. An own goal from Unai Lopez, Athletic's hero the other day, proved to be the only goal of the game and gave Cadiz the 1-0 win. Incredible stuff. Really, really epic. All 3 of the newly promoted sides had good results this week. Elche and Cadiz with those wins, and Huesca with a goalless draw that was really impressive considering they were facing an Atletico Madrid side that had just put 6 past Granada, and they deserved their point too, so well done to Huesca. Then, the only game we've not touched on yet was Sevilla 1, Levante 0, which almost finished goalless too, but Youssef En-Nesyri popped up in stoppage time to earn Sevilla victory in that one. They host Barcelona next in a mouth-watering match day 5. Before we go, let's take a moment to congratulate Granada. There were only 9 La Liga fixtures in this midweek round, and that's because Granada were in Europa League action against Malmo on Thursday, so their La Liga fixture with Osasuna was postponed, and Granada went to Sweden to take on a regular of European football, and they won 3-1. Darwin Machis, Antonio Puertas and Yangel Herrera have written their names into the Granada history books as the goal scorers who fired the team into the Europa League group stages for the very first time. So congrats to all of our Granada supporting friends. A mighty, mighty achievement. Now, that's all we have time for, but we'll be back very soon with another episode coming right after the Matchday 5 fixtures of this weekend. For now, my thanks go to Beñat Gutierrez, Matt Clark, Dom Tancock, Paco Pollitt, and Roman de Arquer. I've been your host, Jim McTeer, and thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.